marks in here, the smarks in here, yeah.
Doom. I reference Cena so much, I'm sure you assume that I got a man crush, but I swear it's just random, not fandom. Ignore the lifelike mannequin. You can't see it, I didn't see it. Next to me in my Kia, and drive somewhere scenic to watch a sunset in Phoenix, share a box of Kleenex, to leave it in the middle of a bee's nest.
Yo, 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 it's your boy Sean Puff. I'm here with Mike Rossi, and this is Smarks, Spot Monkeys, and Super Kicks. It's our WrestleMania weekend review show, part two. So it's episode 49-2. Of course, Mike K not here. He doesn't really do indies. He doesn't watch indie shows. He doesn't go to indie shows. So he wouldn't have any input at all in this. So instead, we got Mike Rossi here with us tonight. And we're going to have a great show. We're going to run through everything. Not through everything. It was a big weekend, but we're just going to kind of break it down and give you our opinions on what was what. We're going to talk top five matches. We're going to talk about a lot of things. But so let's just dive right into this. It was a crazy weekend. I talked about it last night with on the part one with Mike K. And I said, I feel like what WWE did was they stretched their shows out over 5 days, and I'm including Friday because it was SmackDown and that's when they played the Hall of Fame, but it was SmackDown. So I feel like they stretched it out over that period to kind of squeeze out the indie shows. And I don't know if it worked or if it was coming out of COVID, that because there's still so many indies not completely up and running. You don't have people coming from other countries because that's just too hard right now. So, but I feel like this year's indie mania or whatever you want to call it was lackluster in comparison to prior years. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I mean, and that a lot of that has to do with their rosters too. Like, think of like 2019. Before AEW really kicked into gear, all of those guys were still working indies. So, and even WWE's gone through a crazy run of hiring people in the last couple months. So, yeah, I mean, the rosters are down, but that definitely had something to do with it. But further with that, I mean, this was the first year that indies were running opposite shows like WrestleMania, mm-hmm. running opposite shows like NXT to the level that they were this year and over two nights. So, I mean, how many prior years have you seen a show run the same time as Mania?
Yeah, exactly.
They never had the balls to do that in the past. So, but this year they just kind of ran their schedule kind of regardless of WWE. So, and I definitely, as we dig into this, I definitely noticed that the show quality in the indies got better as the weekend went on. A, because guys probably got their nerves out, but then B, you're probably just, you know, at that point there might have been less people in the crowd. So, it was just kind of interesting to watch how it all flowed.
Yeah, it was. It was hard to keep up with, so I touched on this, I think, in my Ringside Apostles podcast that we did on the WrestleMania weekend. I have IWTV, but I kind of just used sites to watch GCW, and Fight TV was on their game. So I'm going to give Fight TV their props because they shut me down on almost every single stream that I watched. So I was like, damn it.
Yeah, they were good.
Yeah, the only show that I got to watch in its entirety was Alley Cat's Hot Girl Shit.
Yeah, so, yeah. And that was probably because it was 11 in the morning, so they probably weren't hunting as much, you know?
They're like, whatever. If you're up watching it at 11 in the morning, you're watching this, fine.
Exactly. Exactly. They saw the gray sweatpants Battle Royal, and they left you alone. They realized that. They realized that you deserved to watch it.
It was interesting, I'll tell you that. It was an interesting show.
You know, I knew of the idea from last year, but it was way more interesting than I even thought. So,
yeah, it was. It's something. I said on that podcast that it's something that I would say go see, like watch that if you want.
Yeah.
maybe you need to be high or have a couple drinks or whatever, but sit down and watch that. It's funny. It's an enjoyable.
It was definitely an interesting watch at 1 p.m. or whatever time it was on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
like I think of like back in New York when they did like the spring break clusterfuck at like 3 a.m.
Yep.
Like it's 3 a.m. Everybody was fucked up. But this year it was 1 p.m., you know, the weirdest match of the weekend, but it was interesting. It definitely got what Faye Jackson wanted out of it, I think.
Absolutely. I think it got more than what she wanted. I think she was overwhelmed with how great that went and the reception for sure. She got afterwards for that. One issue that I had was when in the early shows, like mainly day one, we had about 4 or 5 guys go down to injury.
I think in the first 2 shows, yeah. I mean, like, that first Jimmy Lloyd show, I think they lost 4 guys. And I mean, some of them were just, I mean, one guy got knocked out, one guy passed out. Like, it wasn't stuff that, you know, was really like poor ring or anything like that. It was just the heat, I think, caught up to these guys quick. They might not have been hydrated or whatever, but there was a couple of fluke injuries for sure.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of nobody realizing how hot it's going to be in Florida at 11 in the morning or 12 in the 12 in the afternoon, you know what I mean? Like, no one's expecting it's going to be that hot, because if you're not from there, it's not that hot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, for sure.
You know, where we are, 11, 12, you're fine. You're like, oh, you're good. You're good until like 2, then it'll get hot, which made sense that they had their shows ended at like between 1 and 2, and then we're coming back at 4.
Yeah.
So they were expecting heat. And we're going to take a break from that and miss it. But no one was realizing that it was going to be that early in the morning, that hot. So
yeah, it's Florida, you know. And then as the weekend went on, then they got hit with rain and they had to move their stuff inside. It was crazy.
Yep. But at least you didn't see injury after injury happen, is it? So you could see it wasn't the work. It was just the conditions that they weren't prepared for.
Exactly. And that was good to see. It wasn't, a lot of people see that and they think, oh, typical GCW outlaw mud show bullshit, but it wasn't that at all. It was really just like, I mean, I'm sure some of it could have been probably avoided, but a lot of it was just fluky. So
yeah, I mean, if you knew, if you were prepared for it, if they go back to Florida again for a Mania and they're gonna do a show that early, they're gonna be prepared for that.
They'll
do something different in California.
Yeah, try to do something indoor with AC instead of outdoor in the middle of the
Texas
sun. Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, when everything was in Dallas, they were in AC buildings at all to that point. You know, I mean, obviously COVID pushed them outside, but
they
were going to do outside last year pre-COVID anyway. So,
yeah. So, I don't know. It was a fun weekend. It was hard. Like I said, it was hard for me to keep up because I couldn't watch a lot of the GCW stuff. I watched some of it later and I've skimmed through stuff and watched a little bit here and there. So I still have a lot to catch up on to be like done with everything from WrestleMania weekend. So
yeah, this was my first year that I hadn't gone to Mania since the indie explosion kind of happened.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to kind of piece your day together as like, this is what I'm going to watch here. This is what I'm going to watch there. And even then with both channels going at the same time, I was still watching stuff I wasn't expecting to watch more often than not. So
it was kind of
a cool perspective for me.
Yeah, it has to be so different from being there. But I feel like I didn't have as much to choose from, because I feel like in years past you had 3 or 4 shows going and at a time and they were going until 3 a.m. And it felt like there wasn't as much. There wasn't, maybe, I don't even think there was enough. I wish there would have been more. There weren't that many incredible matches that you were like, oh my God, you got to see this match. I remember in years past, you had like 5 matches that you had to see over that week. There wasn't really that this year.
There were
good matches. Go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. Some of them got lost, but I wonder what if WWE in the future will kind of use their expanded NXT roster and their ownership of the WWN name.
Yep.
And maybe in future years, kind of run kind of what Evolve used to run when they would bring guys in from out of the country. Like, obviously you couldn't do it this year with COVID, but if you bring all your UK guys over, you run their shows opposite the indies.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to have more options. It's going to keep Peacock rolling. Especially if they roll Mania back to a day, like you're saying, they're going to have that whole Saturday or extra day, whenever it is, to work with. So I think that you might see more of that next year, when they might, WWE might actually jump on the fact they have this ridiculous roster of guys they're not even using, especially in NXT.
Yeah.
That maybe they'll piece more of those like smaller shows together as well.
Yeah, and most people already know about the whole Evolve deal and how they have that Evolve. I forget what it's called, but whatever their brand's going to be. So hopefully that rolls out soon, which kind of surprised me with them cutting people. I guess they do it every year.
But, yeah.
But that's another topic for another time. We'll get into that later on. There were some guys that worked a lot. I remember when, so what, 3 years ago, I watched it when they were in New Orleans. DJZ worked like every show that we watched one day. My girl was just like, whoa, who is this guy? How's he at? Like, wasn't he just at that last building? How'd he get here? I'm like, I don't know. He probably took an Uber.
Yeah.
And it was happening. That's what was happening. You were there. So I'm sure you saw that with these guys showing up, rushing to get to the next show because they were at one part of it.
It was super hard there too, because where Evolve ran, which was where like GCW was or Spring Break and like Beyond was, Bloodsport, all that stuff, they were like a good 25 minutes outside of New Orleans proper. I think it was actually like Kenner, New Orleans, or Louisiana.
Yeah.
But then where WrestleCon was, is it was a walk from the stadium. Everything was in, you know, right near Bourbon Street. So it was really tough to get in and out of there for the guys. So a lot of guys stopped going to bookings later on, and then they had to reshuffle the deck a lot. So that was more of a cluster. I mean, not as much as New York was in 19 mm-hmm. when you had shows in Jersey, shows in Manhattan. Yep. Like that was a logistical nightmare. But New Orleans wasn't as easy as you'd think it was based on the location.
Well, I mean, you'd see guys running into the building like right before, and you're like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah. They probably didn't even talk to their opponent before they got in the ring with them because they were 30 minutes away, 45 minutes ago, you know?
Yep. But and then on top of that, we didn't have WrestleCon this year. That's another thing that we were missing. So, you know.
Yeah.
Between that and WWN being gone, that's a whole a shit ton of shows, because you would have had FIP, you would have had probably two WWN super shows, you would have had Evolve, probably would have had two shows. So there's five shows right there. Progress,
And then you lost the WrestleCon Super Show. You lost, I mean, obviously you wouldn't have the Joey Ryan show this year, but they did have Pancakes and Pile Drivers, stuff like that.
Yep. You would have had Shine, because that's their female, that was their woman's brand. So, a lot of stuff gone. Hopefully it comes back next year. Hopefully we're able to get there. But like I said, even though it was less, I don't feel like I still
have a lot. It wasn't gripping.
Yeah.
Nothing this year was gripping you to watch it, you know?
Yeah. So let's talk about the guys who worked the most. You said you had a whole list that you sent out. Let's start with we had Nolan Edward at the top of that list. He said 12 and you counted 11.
Yeah, he said 12. I counted 11. I probably missed something somewhere. But what was crazy about him is he worked the most matches, and they were like all death matches. So I mean, this guy would go from selling a shoulder on an ICW show to 2 hours later having to work a GCW show and pretending he was 100%. It was really interesting watching him go from show to show.
Yeah,
but he was almost exclusively death matches, whether it was ICW No Holds Barred or whether it was the GCW shows. He was putting himself through thumbtacks and plates of glass, like chairs, whatever, all weekend. The fact that he was standing come Sunday was astonishing, versus like the other guys you'll see on the list, like a Lee Moriarty was 9, but he works a grapple style. Yeah. So it's kind of, I don't want to say it's easier to, I mean, it is definitely absolutely easier to work that style than it is to do like all death matches. And I mean, this guy, I mean, Nolan Edwards was working, he wasn't working like up and coming death match guys. He was working Schlock. He was working Dan Moff. He was working like guys like Tankman. He was getting thrown around and beat up a lot. And the fact he made it through the weekend without what seems like any major injuries is crazy.
I still got to watch his match. There's so many matches I got to watch still. Moriarty, you said, had 9. And then after that, Oliver with 8.
Yeah, see, Oliver and Moriarty, they did the Acid Cup, and they did three matches in one day, but that entire thing was four matches, so that helped build their number up. What was crazy about Oliver, though, is he was almost exclusively at the GCW site. He just seemingly worked every show that was there, where guy like Moriarty went back and forth from GCW to IWTV, and, you know, he'd work, like, different types of matches, but he was a lot more of the mat-based stuff, whether it was against Leo Rush, whether it was against, I think he worked Rich Swann on Spring Break. He had matches with people that, you know, he could kind of control his body a little bit better than, like, Nolan Edward could. Yeah. And then Jordan Oliver, I mean, he stayed away from a lot of the deathmatch stuff. He did have one that I remember. I can't put it all together at this point, but, you know, he had a long 25-minute match with Leo Rush on Spring Break a couple hours after he did three matches to win the Acid Cup. So he definitely had a crazy output, and I think seven of his eight were over, like, a 24-hour span. Like, he didn't really start working until Friday.
Yeah.
And then he put them all together in, like, a 24-hour window. So his was definitely impressive for sure.
I was surprised because I'm not a Jordan Oliver fan at all. At all.
Yeah.
So, and the couple matches I saw, he won. So, yeah, he's getting over and doing his thing. I think he looks like a lesbian, but...
A change for him, and my biggest, and I laugh at that, because my biggest complaint with him is I've always been a fan of his, but I never liked his look.
Yeah.
Because he looks like he just rolled out of bed on a street corner. Like, that's just how he's
always looked. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But Spring Break, he had, like, real gear on. He actually looked like a presentable wrestler, and it made you enjoy the psychology of his match way more than just looking at him like he's a homeless bum. So I'm excited to see where the rest of the year is going to go for him now that he's kind of figured that part out and he's starting to make a little bit of money. So I'm hoping that, you know, the more he succeeds in MLW, the more he's going to start to put himself out there in the indies and work more of, like, a credible style, and, you know, put himself kind of in that upper echelon where I think he belongs, but he just needs to be taken seriously more, I think.
Fair enough. And then we get next on the list. We had, well, not even next on the list, tied with Jordan Oliver, we had Garcia.
This would be a good time to talk about the Sweatpants Battle Royal, because I thought Daniel Garcia was the most entertaining part of that. He was in there, because my biggest knock with Garcia is that he's like a charisma repellent. He has none of it. Great wrestler. His size is kind of a problem, I think, but he can pretty much wrestle any type of style you want him to. Seeing him dancing in the Sweatpants Battle Royal, it kind of brought charisma out of him for the first time that I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interesting to see if he grows off of that coming out of this weekend. But, I mean, he was one that definitely worked a bunch of different styles. He worked a match with Deppin on ICW. It wasn't as much of a hardcore match as, like, the ICW brand is, but it was still no rules. So they were doing some more stuff. Then turning around, I think he worked one of the shows. I want to say it was the Violence and Suffering show, the Lucid Dreams one, which is super late night. He worked the Puro Rules match with AJ Gray. So he kind of showed the most resilience as far as match types, I thought, this week. And I learned a lot more about kind of him coming out of a shell a little bit than I have in the past. I've always liked him, but I definitely have a different look at him now that he's got a little bit more of that confidence in him.
Makes sense. The next on the list, we had another tie. We had AJ Gray and we had Murdoch.
So Murdoch's another one that was all death matches. The clip that, I mean, Murdoch, I think, left ICW with their new title, which is interesting that them and GCW both announced the hardcore title the same, or death match title the same weekend. That's not really surprising that they're trying to one up each other, but Murdoch is pretty much a straight up death match guy. He's probably going to be more known this weekend for shooing Teddy Hart off when Teddy Hart tried to get into an ICW show. I don't know if you saw that video, but he went out with a kendo stick and made sure Teddy Hart didn't come in.
Oh, that's funny. I heard Teddy Hart was trying to get in everywhere and nobody would let him in.
So, but apparently he was backstage at Bloodsport.
Okay.
And there was but that was because Davey Boy Smith Jr. was on the show. So that he probably came as part of Davey's entourage there, because I saw a picture of Davey with Dickinson and Teddy Hart. So, but then Teddy Hart was kind of banished from everything, but then he was at Mania. Like, he was in the crowd at Mania. So it was kind of interesting to watch the trials and tribulations of Teddy Hart this week too, but Murdoch definitely was probably more known this past weekend for getting rid of him when he tried to get into ICW.
At least he's not in jail right now, I guess.
Hey, maybe by the end of this conversation.
We'll right. And then who else did we have? AJ Gray.
Another one. He was all types of different styles. He did like that Puro match with Garcia. He did a death match on the Planet Death show with, I can't think of who it was, but, and then he was the main event of the Effie's Big Gay Brunch too, against Billy Dixon, I think it was. So he yeah. definitely worked a bunch of different styles. I mean, AJ Gray is a good wrestler. So it was interesting to see him kind of make his way through everything as the week went on.
And then the next three we had Tankman, Starks, and Dominic Guarini with six.
All right. Yeah, so that's pretty much, I think, before it starts to kind of fall off. But, yeah, Tankman had some really good matches with – he had a good one with Moff in ICW. He worked both. He did a little GCW as well. He was on, like, For the Culture and a couple of the other GCW shows. But Tankman's a beast. I mean, he's getting a lot of shine in MLW now, which is nice to see. But he's got a big year ahead of him. Billy Starks, 16-year-old girl. She – it's crazy to think about that, but
yeah.
she worked some good matches. I mean, she had a match with Alley Cat that I thought was pretty good on Alley's show. Then she worked Starboy Charlie and the Open Spring Break. They had a pretty good crowd reaction. Her best match of the weekend, though, was on Tony Deppen's show during the IWTV Independent, whatever. They were the noon show on Saturday. Yeah. With Heather Monroe, who I think is big in California. But that was probably Stark's best match for the weekend. I mean, you look at Billy Starks. I don't know if you saw any of her matches. She doesn't look 16 at all.
I saw her match at Alley Cat show.
Yeah, yeah. So she's got some good size to her. I think 2-3 years from now, she'll be in a contract with somebody. I'd be surprised if she wasn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then Greg Guarini was the other one.
Yep.
Yeah, Guarini doesn't really do it for me.
Me neither. Me neither. I don't know what it is about him.
Yeah, some of his stuff was tag matches. He did have he went kind of deep in the ICW tournament as well. So that was kind of what built his numbers up. He was exclusively IWTV, I believe. So I don't know. He just has like the tough guy MMA gimmick, but he doesn't look like a tough guy. It just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely. He looks soft to me. I'm like, how are you this? Yeah, I don't know. So I got a question for you. I know you're a big Beyond guy. What was up with the Beyond Time Capsule show having no commentary with the show?
So from what I hear, it was supposed to be Dickinson and Drew who runs Beyond, but Drew did not make it down to Tampa. He's been sick. So nothing crazy, but so then it would have just been Dickinson by himself and they just decided not to do it. But what was supposed to happen was it was supposed to be all the wrestlers were supposed to surround the ring, which is kind of the old how Beyond studio tapings used to be. And that was the feel that they were going with, especially with some of these guys that haven't worked for Beyond in years. So they just decided they would put all the wrestlers out there and kind of have them push the story. But then the wrestlers didn't go out there because Drew wasn't there to kind of push the show together. So it kind of fell apart in that aspect. I wish that they had their normal Beyond crew there, or they just threw in wrestlers in between their matches. That is definitely a misstep for them, but it ended up being a pretty good show, but I definitely think
I couldn't watch the whole thing.
It made it tough to watch.
Yeah, I bet you there were other people like me. Like, I watched probably 25, 30 minutes of it, maybe, because I was trying to get through it. I just wanted to watch it. But it was just too difficult to get through.
Yeah, so, if it was a big crowd, then maybe you could get through it more if there were, like, chants and stuff. But there wasn't a big crowd because it was 4 p.m. before Mania. So it was definitely tough to watch, which sucked because from what I hear, a lot of the in-ring was good. I haven't watched the full show yet, but there was a couple guys that were just coming out of retirement for that show and stuff like that. So I'm hoping that maybe they go back in and redub over that or something.
Yeah, that would be great if they did that, actually. So what do we want to go on to next? Let's talk about the top matches to watch, because we can't run through everything because there's way too much to watch. Of course, there's the shows that if you want, if you're into that, you're going to like it. Like Effie's Big Gay Brunch is going to, you have your own crowd. That's what you're going to go watch. Go watch that. And I'm not talking down about any show at all.
Yeah, there's something for everybody, for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes you'll watch a show that you might not think that you would have liked that you liked. Like, I enjoyed Joey Ryan's Penis Party when he did that. I thought that was great. I wrote a review for it and loved it, and I thought it was amazing for what it was. I was looking at it at the time that it was, and you know what I mean? I sat down, I smoked, I had alcohol with me, and I watched it, and I was like, this is fucking great right now.
Yeah. My last in New York, I was working WrestleCon. I had a booth. I was doing like a merch line then. And I went out to like hit the bathroom at one point. I walked by and I saw like dude dressed like a penis, like in the middle of the ring. And I didn't even realize the show was going on. And I look and I'm like, what am I missing? And someone's like, Joey Ryan's Penis Party. I go, makes perfect sense. that looks entertaining, but I'm going to keep going now.
Yeah. No, but it was a fun show. It was a really, really fun show. And I feel like if you go into it knowing it's Joey Ryan and knowing what you're going to expect, and that's what it is. You know what I mean? If you go in and expect it, I'm not saying put it on and in the middle of WrestleMania, but
that was
fun for what it was. I enjoyed it. I had a blast watching it.
The clips I've seen of those over the years, I definitely agree with you.
Yeah. All right. So give me your top five. Let's run down your top five matches from the indies over the weekend.
So, I mean, you got to go. I mean, if I'm really in no order, but I think the top two are Barnett and Moxley, and Gage and RSP for spring break. So, first of all, mostly because the anticipation behind those two matches, like this was the third or fourth time that Moxley and Barnett was supposed to happen. I personally think they waited until Moxley got the title off of him in AEW because Barnett refuses to lose. But I mean, the only person that he hasn't beaten in Bloodsport is Minoru Suzuki, and he went overtime and drew with him. So I definitely think that had a lot to do with it. It was a political game there. But the match finally happened, and it was awesome. Moxley's great in that format. And what really, when I see Moxley work indies now, it really makes me wish that he wasn't in AEW, because the part that Moxley we see in AEW is like just a little bit of the indie Moxley, and he isn't truly able to be himself. When on the indies, he's awesome. I mean, he comes out, he looks like he's ready to kick somebody's ass. He's believable in that role without having to add any of the goofiness he needs to on TV, like over the top promos or anything like that. And like, as we'll talk about it, I'm sure when we talk about Gage and RSP, Moxley came out at the end of it and challenged Gage for a future match without saying a word. He just got in the ring, got in his face, put his forehead up against Gage's, looked like the biggest badass in wrestling. You don't see that a lot of times in AEW, because then he's got to talk and explain what he's doing, and it kind of gets himself in trouble. He's a good talker, don't get me wrong, but it's delivering that TV promo that kind of takes away his character. On the indies, he doesn't have to worry about that. And he's able to kind of present himself probably the way he wants to.
Yeah.
And it works for him. So those, I think, were the clear one, too, for me, because A, anticipation behind him. And, I mean, the in-ring work was great for both of them. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying Gage and RSP was this classic Matt battle, but, I mean, it was as good of a death match as you could find.
I enjoyed it. And I'm not a Moxley fan. I fucking hate Moxley, but I think he's a huge over actor, and more so in WWE and AEW, but I watched even his old Evolve show matches, and I still feel like, and even this weekend, I feel like he overemphasizes his emotion a lot of the times. Like when he had a headlock on Josh Barnett, and he's making it seem like he's like squeezing so hard. And
yeah,
like, come on, man, don't, you don't have to overdo it that much. Like, it's not like
that's the TV that's entrenched in him, I think. Because he was never a pretty wrestler before WWE.
Yeah.
Now he's got to kind of do things that way. I think he's just trying to beat that portion of it off of himself.
It frustrates me when I see it. I hate it. I'm like, stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even sometimes in his emotions and.
I thought the blood and the Moxie Barnett match definitely added to it.
Yeah, I thought it was. I enjoyed it. I don't usually enjoy his shit, but I enjoyed that.
I love the blood sport format because especially the Barnett ones and the guys that take it seriously. Like whenever Dickinson does it, he's good. Whenever Suzuki was in there, he was good. It's because it's like, it looks like, obviously it's the most real feel of a fight that you'll get in wrestling, just by the rules in itself. And they've always done a good job in making the knockouts look like legitimate knockouts and make everything like everything felt like real fights. And every time Barnett's in there, you think about his UFC days, his MMA days, and, you know, he looks like he's ready to kill somebody at all times. So that match definitely worked for me.
And then, so, God, you run your list. This is, I want to hear your, this is your five. So you get, so that's, so that we know that's like the top two. You want to go right into RSP and Gage, or do you want to start with five and work our way up?
No, well, we might as well, while we're here, Gage and RSP, everything about this worked. I mean, this was a year and a half build. RSP took the title from him in December of 2019. This thing, just RSP then became the best heels that the Indies have seen in a while. He's turned 4-4-0 into pretty much the NWO of the Indies. Everybody hates him, but they're still buying their merch. It's just, it's always worked out. And this match finally happened. It was probably going to be last year's Spring Break main event, but obviously Spring Break didn't happen in the original method. And then Gage got hurt. So it was kind of like a year and a half build to get to this match. And I thought the way that they did everything in regards to rolling 4-4-0 out and then having the GCW locker room come and take them out all the way to the finish when Koger came out and then Brett Lauderdale came out, him with a kendo stick and counted the three. I thought that everything was put together well. It was great to see Gage back in the ring because he's kind of been hurt for a while, probably like, 6 months or so. So it was definitely a fun match to watch. And Gage getting back on top. I mean, getting the title back on Gage made a ton of sense at this point. And obviously he's got his whatever that promo is that's coming out, the Dark Side of the Ring or whatever.
Yeah.
He should have a title when that comes out, when people start to figure out who he is and they look him up, it'll make the company look bigger. But then when Moxley came out after the show ended and kind of got in Gage's face to set up that title match, that definitely made everything feel bigger. The way they did it was perfect. You know, it looked like Gage was ready to cut his show ending promo. Then random music plays and Moxley slowly walks out from the back, gets in Gage's face. Thing was just really well done. I think it was a good way to suck in viewers. And I'll tell you one thing, I've seen that match in the past, way back in the day, but I'm real excited to see it again. So I can't wait till when they do it. If they're smart, they do that like within a week or two of Gage's doc hitting the airwaves, because everybody's gonna be looking for him and they're gonna be ready to spend money on him. So match was awesome. Really the match, probably the match I was most excited for all weekend, and it delivered for me. So I was happy to see that. Happy to see Gage back on top.
You know, that match was wild for me. And again, I don't really watch much deathmatch wrestling. I will here and there. Usually Mania week, I'll watch a couple shows. And so I'll watch a couple matches. I don't even really. And I admit that most of the time when I do that, I'll do other things in the background. So I'm not really paying full attention to the match. But this match was wild. They brought everything out, and I was just like, okay. It's like, all right, I can.
Some of the bumps Gage took through, like the glass that was set up on the outside, was crazy. Hitting, I mean, I think one time he crashed head first on the cement. I didn't think he was going to get up, but it's Nick Gage. Of course he's going to get up.
Dude's head was completely red. It looked like he just took paint and dumped it on his head. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah. And here's the deal. I still don't think he's healthy, but I mean, with that documentary coming out, he had to kind of put up or shut up at this point. So. Last thing GCW is gonna want is if this guy's in a documentary showing all their stuff.
Yeah.
And people look him up. Oh, Gage hasn't wrestled in a year, you know? So I think he kind of toughened this one out. So I don't think you'll see him work as much as he did in the past, but all of his matches moving forward are going to feel bigger because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's the champ. So it makes, and it makes the title feel bigger. So it's a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
He's a guy you can throw the, he's a guy you can do that with, throw the belt on him and have him just kind of defend it here and there. And now if you got the first one against Moxley, you know, Moxley's not going to win the title. That's a given. I'm going to look forward to that. I want to see Moxley get his ass beat in a real death match. Yeah. Oh my God.
For sure.
But I enjoyed this match. This was great. One spot that I think that I wish went down better was when he chucked him off the scaffold.
Yeah, agree. That was like
he went through the glass and he kind of hits like some of the he threw him too hard.
Yeah,
he threw him a little too far.
I think my lasting image of that match is always going to be him attempting to carve MDK and RSP's back.
Right.
That was kind of like as he's doing it, I'm like, I don't want to see this. And then he stopped doing it, and then 5 minutes later, he's back doing it again. I'm like, I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
And at that point, RSP's back looked even worse than I'm describing. So it was definitely a sight for sore eyes. For sure.
Yeah. It was a wild one. All right, so what do you get next on your list?
So Dan Moff and Calvin Tankman, No Holds Barred, then and now, which was their 11th No Holds Barred. I mean, this match was awesome. I mean, to anybody that knows Tankman and Moff, I mean, they're two of the baddest looking dudes out there. And I mean, it was just awesome. I mean, these guys going through tables, using chairs, just beating the piss out of each other. Tankman does this crazy big splash on the top rope, which, again, looking at Tankman, it's even crazier when you see it than thinking about it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Moff kicks out. And then the match ends with Moff hitting this crazy, crazy burning hammer on Tankman. And it was just, the crowd was good for this match. I think it was the best single match that No Holds Barred ran all weekend. And then Moff left that match and went in the next day and won their tournament, which was four matches in one day. They split that up over two shows like the Acid Cup did. So Moff had a good weekend there. I know Moff's a name that's kind of, I don't know, he was kind of thrown into the cancel culture piece of wrestling for a while and got fired from ROH and all that fun mess. But it was really nice to see him back out there and kind of getting some shine on his name again.
Absolutely. I like both of those guys. That's a match. I haven't watched this yet, but I'm going to go watch that one. Absolutely.
Yeah. We'll do Eat Is Surreal, which was the old Still Life with Apricots and Pears, the old Chikara name. She had a IWTV title match against Lee Moriarty. Now, Lee Moriarty won that title after beating Warhorse, after winning the Masked Wrestler, which was a kind of a COVID reality show they had on IWTV. Moriarty won the title like a month ago. This was his first defense. And Eat Is Surreal and him had a really fun mat-based match. It was like the first show of the day for IWTV on Thursday. Quick match, probably would have liked for it to have gone longer, but with it being both of their first match of the weekend, they probably saved themselves a little bit. But I thought the finish was really cool. It's definitely worth checking out. You know, seeing them both kind of grapple to the extent that they did was very interesting to me. I mean, I know Porter didn't make it on here, but I mean, he was pissed when I told him to watch it because he doesn't like watching intergender. And then he was like, that match was awesome. So I definitely think it was one of those matches that if you don't like intergender, it makes you forget that.
Can I say that I'm going to be the one to say it, cause I don't care. I don't care about cancel culture and PC shit. It's not really an intergender match because a guy anyway. So, you know what I mean? The way I look at it is a guy. It's a girl now, but that was a male. That's where she should wrestle. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. No, and I definitely hear you there. Took the words out of my mouth. You beat me to it. So I think that match really worked. And I think that if they have a rematch down the road that's longer, I'm more interested to see it now based off the little bit they gave us on Thursday. So that was probably the two best IWTV matches of the week. And then we already talked about the GCW ones. So I think where I'll close it is I want to give Nolan Edwards his due, because this dude pretty much finished his weekend with GCW by doing a death match for Slock on the 3 p.m. Saturday afternoon show.
Yep.
Match was awesome. I didn't get to see a lot of Slock this weekend. He just seemed to not be on the shows I was watching, or I just missed his match when I put a show on. So I was really pumped to actually have the TV on in front of me when Slock showed up for this match. And I mean, Nolan Edwards, I mean, this guy's going to have a huge year out of this. We talked about it earlier, but him and Slock had just a brutal death match. I mean, Slock is Slock. I mean, that guy's always going to find a way to entertain you no matter what happens. But I think that these two kind of tore the roof off of that show. And in a death match show, I thought they were the ones who stole the show.
Yeah, no, I didn't watch that Planet Death yet again. There's so much stuff that I feel like matches I've really missed.
Yeah, yeah.
Edith Surreal, Lee Moriarty. I actually don't think I watched that show yet. What time did that show come on?
That was IWTV's reunion show that was at noon on Thursday. So it was their first show of the weekend.
Yeah, I missed the first show of the weekend. Yeah. So I'll have to go back and watch that.
That was the main event of that. Yeah, that was the main event of that. That it was like probably like a 10-minute match, if that. But it was pretty entertaining.
It's great because we're driving down to Florida tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I get tons of wrestling to watch while I'm driving.
Yeah, everything IWTV is up. If we look at the IWTV schedule, the shows that I found the most entertaining were the Pit Fighter shows and that ICW put on. Those were great because they present them like real fights in a cage.
Yep.
So none of the matches go that long, so you don't really get bored by it. And then being in the cage, sometimes you feel if you're going to do a tournament in a cage, you feel like you're going to see the same match a couple times. You really don't. I thought that show was good. The sleeper show for me was No Peace Underground show that they did at midnight. I don't even remember what it was called. They did a couple. But that show had like a Jake Something, Tony Deppen match that was really good. The way they presented that show, though, now they're normally a no-ring promotion. They use the ring for this show. This is the way the venue was set up. But the way they presented the show was like an ever-flowing like movie, that there was a guy and two guys in the back that had like pictures on the walls, and they would always like present what the next match was before it happened. So then they cut to the ring, cut to the intro, and there's your match. And then it was shot on like a bird's eye view or like eagle eye view. So it was like one camera cut, like it would, again, because there are no ring setup normally, that's probably how you have to shoot that. But you'll definitely notice that. I think I only liked it because it was a different feel from the rest of the shows.
Yeah.
And when you're watching 30 shows in a weekend or whatever it was,
it's good like to get something different. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's why I liked that one. I thought that was a fun show and it had a lot of talent on it too. I
mean, so
Deppens, your Nolan Edwards, guys like that.
So that might, I was thinking about that, and that might be why I enjoyed Jon Moxley's match so much, because with all the wrestling that I watched, it was a very different match from the other matches I saw.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So I, and could be why I really, really enjoyed that match of his.
Yeah.
For sure. But yeah, I'll have to check that out. So what was your overall, give me your overall thoughts on the indies over this weekend, this week.
So when I stopped, because of the way they paced it out, was Thursday they had the day shows, and then they kind of had like the dinner time break for the 8 o'clock shows. And I think what was the 8 o'clock show Thursday was Bloodsport. And then NXT was on. So I didn't watch Bloodsport live. I waited till after, because I'm a big NXT guy. So I was into watching that TakeOver live before it got spoiled for me. So I kind of took a break from indies for a few hours that day, and then came back hard with it after TakeOver. It started rough. I mean, those first two GCW shows were kind of tough. I mean, Acid Cup were good matches, but that's where the injuries and the heat was. Didn't have a good flow to the weekend. The IWTV reunion shows, which are their first two, were a little bit better, but I didn't watch a lot of that live. I kind of just like creeped in and out based off what matches were on. If you look at the layout of the shows the entire week, you were super pumped for what GCW was putting together with all of their collective shows. You looked at the IWTV cards and you were like, this is nothing new. It's all the same names. I don't think that IWTV had a bad show on all weekend. Everything kind of worked. I thought that venue looked awesome at that brewery they were in. It just had a cool feel to it. And the way they put their shows together with the different promotions that ran them, they all had a different feel to them, whether it was ICW or that Beyond Time Capsule show, or, you know, the ICW show that ran opposite Mania. They all had different feels to them, where even though GCW kind of all had different feels because, you know, they had like, the best way to describe it is they had like the gay show, they had the For the Culture show, they had the deathmatch show. They still all felt like GCW shows. And I think being outside, they all looked the same. Even though you were in a different setup in IWTV, they all worked. And I talked to like Drew from Beyond, and I said to him, like, look, I wasn't excited about these IWTV shows at all, but I think they pretty much all delivered. Once you got through those first couple shows on Thursday, I thought the weekend was great. Friday was really solid top to bottom. And then Saturday, you were kind of, I didn't watch as much because I was gearing up for Mania and I knew that'd be a long night. But even when you look back at everything now, everything was fun to watch. I mean, I don't think that there was a bad show. Once you got through those early shows on Thursday, obviously you can pick and choose which matches you watch because it's impossible to watch everything. I mean, I haven't seen everything, but I've tried to go back, like that ICW show, the Moff and Tankman show match on. I went back and watched a couple matches on that today. I'll just kind of creep and go there. That's why it's nice to have IWTV, because IWTV is a platform that works. It's a platform that gets their stuff up pretty quick, and it's $10 a month and you get everything. It sounds like a promotion for them, but they have a lot of good.
It's $100 if you buy it for the whole year.
So there you go. And I mean, the collective alone was $140 if you bought the whole thing on Fight.
Yeah.
So it was, the value in itself explains it there. And yeah, would I, if I had to pick one to watch, I'd probably go GCW, but $10 versus $140, it becomes a no brainer. So yeah, I think that they did, I think they did a good job in balancing that out. And I think we saw by the end of the weekend that ICW is creeping up on GCW more than you would have thought they were at this point. And obviously, if you know their story, it came from ICW came back based off a split with the two owners of GCW, and now one owns one, one owns the other. But they're definitely closer to each other at this point than you would have thought. Obviously, GCW made a lot more money this weekend because of the Spring Break name and the Bloodsport name and everything that came with it. Looked at all the other GCW shows, though. They weren't really good attendance. So I think that ICW is definitely creeping up. And I think this time next year, it's going to be interesting to see how they continue to grow. And ICW, my biggest knock with them was that, you know, you present the no-holds-barred format. Every match is going to eventually feel the same. Now they rolled the Pit Fighter in there. Whole way different feel. So I'm excited to see where they go moving forward. And I think this time next year, we're talking about Mania weekend in Dallas. IWTV and their crew might be just as exciting as GCW. And we'll kind of see how these guys that just got laid off kind of fit into the mix here going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. All these guys that got laid, let's talk about that before we get out of here. So everybody knows after Mania, there's always layoffs. They always cut the roster every year. I think was it a year to the day of the last one? Of
literally the 15th.
You know, so you know it's what they do. They do it every single year, so people get all surprised by it. I honestly don't think that I'm very surprised by the lists. Let me see if I can pull. Do you have it in front of you right now? If you don't, I have it. I got it right here. So okay. it was Mojo Rawley, Chelsea Green, Tucker, Wesley Blake, Kalisto, Bo Dallas, both of the Iconics, and Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe, of course, being the biggest surprise in all of that. I think he's going to go somewhere and do things. I don't know what they were thinking letting him go. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe his whatever happened with his injuries, he's not going to be able to get back in the ring, and they didn't like him as a commentator.
But that's what I'm wondering, because it doesn't make sense that he got cut. If he's able to wrestle, him getting cut doesn't make sense. So that's why I'm starting to think that maybe he can't, or maybe it's one of those situations where they're not going to clear him, but if he wants to go wrestle somewhere else, that's on him, and they don't want anything to do with it. I've never really known what his injuries were, so it's tough for me to speculate. But typically when they're quiet injuries, like, you know, Edge's were originally or Bryan's were originally, it's normally stuff with the head. So yeah. And if Samoa Joe had injury, had, you know, concussion issues or head issues, wouldn't surprise me with the style that he's worked for 20 plus years. So, I mean, he's a guy that if he can work, I look forward to it because he's one of my favorite wrestlers ever. I mean, I was in that building in Lowell when he beat Finn for the title. Yeah, saw him in ROH a bunch of times. He's one of my favorite wrestlers I've ever seen. So I really hope he can continue to work. I hope he doesn't end up in AEW. I'd rather see him work some indies, you know, do some ROH, do some New Japan, but primarily
Impact. Unless we have to talk Impact. We didn't even talk Impact yet. So yeah. After we talk about this, we're going to talk Impact.
Yeah. So primarily I hope that he's healthy enough to continue to go. And if he is, you know, he's going to have good matches wherever he ends up.
Absolutely. Other than that, I don't really know. Like, most of these people, you can look at them and you know some of them are going to go to specific places. Like, I think Chelsea Green's going to end up back in Impact because that's
100%.
Where, you know, her man's there.
She's pretty much already teasing it. Like, I was looking that up earlier. Like,
yeah,
a bunch of people in Impact were already like welcoming her back. She'll be there as soon as July hits when she can. I could see it be, and she's best friends with Deonna Purrazzo too. My thing with her is I bet that was a kind of some residual from that party that they had on New Year's, yep, where a bunch of, you know, they laid off the Deonna's boyfriend there. The dude that was with was a Steve Cutler. I think that all kind of merged together. And what was weird about her though, is that it seemed like they wanted to push her, but then every time they did, she got hurt. So they probably just, I think with them, you know, you look at NXT, I mean, from this week's NXT, it seems like Io Shirai is coming up soon. It seems like there's other people that are Tony Storm, who knows? There's a ton of talent that's kind of being underutilized in NXT, and there's girls that are waiting to be pushed down there. So I think we'll see some of those girls come up to the main roster, and then you look at it and you're like, are you going to really push Chelsea Green over Io Shirai? No, yeah, exactly. They're not. So
yeah.
So I think it was kind of a, and I'm sure she wants to work where Cardona is anyways. So yeah, it all makes sense. Iconics bummed me out because I thought they were great as an act, but you're not going to miss them. And they were never going to work as an in-ring group anyway. So it just wasn't there for them.
Yep,
I just found it interesting that Billie Kay worked Mania and 3 days later, she's out of job. It's just kind of interesting how it worked.
Right, right. And I think Peyton Royce, at least, if not both of them, will end up in AEW.
Yeah. I agree.
July 14th on a Wednesday. So
yeah.
You know what that means.
Yeah, for sure. But the rest of them, I mean, Kalisto's got some upside if he wants to go back.
And I forgot Mickey James, too. Mickey James was.
Yeah. Nice. She'll probably go back to Impact, too, or maybe NWA with Aldis. Nick,
yeah, yep.
And that's the thing, is maybe some of these names, the way, I mean, obviously some of them are probably shocked, and some of them might have wanted to go. And then, you know, Peyton might have heard that Billy was gone and asked if she could go, too, you know.
Did you see Mickey's tweet?
Yeah.
So, you know, she was happy. She wasn't like upset about it. I appreciate the keys to the golden handcuffs. So, you know what I mean? Like, that was her saying, like, I kind of wanted to go. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. And they haven't used her in how long? Like, you know, I mean,
way too long.
I thought that it looked like on social media they were trying to put her and Chelsea together as a tag team because they were kind of teasing that.
All right, go. Sorry. Everything got cut off, but.
Oh, it's all good. Yeah, they ever going to really push a woman's tag team? The tag teams they push are the ones they put together on the spot because they have nothing for them. Shayna, Nia, Asuka, Kairi, Charlotte, Asuka. That's what their women's division is. So I don't expect the Iconics. I mean, the Iconics are better together. So hopefully they end up together in AEW or wherever they go. But none of the other male talents that got released, in my opinion, are going to be people that are missed. Tucker, are you going to miss Tucker? No.
No, I don't think so. So, and then let's talk. Did you get to watch Impact?
I saw the highlights. I didn't watch the full show, but I was following it.
It wasn't a great show. I guess Tommy Dreamer ran the show. So there was some shit that I was just kind of like, eh. I thought the blindfold hardcore match was kind of the way that it just played out. It was just kind of like, why was it here?
Yeah.
I felt like that. Oh, sorry. Thank you. I felt like most of the show was that, actually. Most of that show was like, why is this here? There was no moose. Why was there no moose?
Dude, so I was looking up when I was doing the rundown of everybody's indie matches. There was some, like, there's a second GCW that's called Generation Championship Wrestling that works in Florida. And they ran like three shows this past week as well. One of them opened with Moose against EC3. No, I had no idea that it happened.
Oh, shit.
So it was like Moose beats EC3 by DQ.
Huh.
Stupid. But I don't know. I think Moose is leaving.
Maybe.
I don't know. Like, the way that they're booking him or not booking him. And I heard his contract was up. I don't know if he's a WWE name, but he's best friends with Apollo and Ricochet. So it wouldn't surprise
me. True story, yeah. But I mean,
Who
knows, though? Apollo's not going to get cut, but Ricochet could get cut tomorrow. Yeah, you never know. Yeah.
Moose is in the best shape of his life.
Yes.
I know WWE passed on him a few years ago. Maybe they told him to trim up and we'll take you. Who knows? But I think the most noteworthy thing that I noticed out of the Impact show was Jazz retiring, where she lost the Loser Leaves Town match.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a legitimate retirement based on everything she's doing on social media. So.
Yep. I would love to see Moose come in and work with Apollo and the big Polish guy that they're saying is an African.
Yeah. Baba Tandu. Yeah.
He's Polish. You know that, right?
Yeah.
He's fucking Polish.
Oh, yeah.
But now he's Commander
Aziz. Whatever his name is. His third WWE name.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. But I could see Moose working in NXT.
Oh, I could.
You know, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's good enough. And he would work well with a Full Sail crowd once they're back.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I just hope he's not going to AEW.
Yeah, I don't either. I feel like if he was, they would kind of start to, they would have maybe put him in the Omega match.
True.
Or they would have started to put him on Dynamite. I just have a weird feeling he ends up in WWE.
Yeah, it would make sense.
Yeah.
I just hope, like I said, next year we have more indies for Mania Week. For me, it's just so much better. You're right that the indies are depleted. Just AEW, WWE signing a lot of guys. I think next year we'll also be able to have New Japan will be able to run a show here. They did it.
And then ROH should be back too. So.
So hopefully we'll get that next year. We'll be back to normal and we'll have a more spectacular weekend.
Yeah.
And hopefully we get some new up and coming talent that, you know, starts to make everyone look and say, oh, you got to watch this guy, you know?
Yeah.
I want another Keith Lee.
Same thing. It'll be interesting to see who gets signed between now and then. I mean, some of the indie guys that got signed in the last couple months, like your Anthony Greens, your Blake Christians, those weren't guys you were expecting to get signed. So now that they are, you know, that makes the opening for somebody else, but will these indies take advantage of it? You know, it'll be nice to see if in the next couple months, I mean, obviously Beyond's back, GCW's been running, but it'll be nice to see if like PWG gets back up and going, because that's kind of where they go before they sign.
So, yeah, absolutely. And there's another one. They run in California, so they're going to be in Dallas next year. PWG can get down there for that. And then the next one, it's going to be in Hollywood. So PWG will probably run a few shows there, maybe. And
you should have the WrestleCon shows back, which they do a lot of like international stuff and like connections with Mexico. So you should get your CMLL guys. Maybe you'll have like a Andrade working an indie show. You know, maybe he'll be working with somebody in GCW at this point. You never know. It's exciting. Some of the names that are out there that weren't used for Mania Weekend, but because they're stuck in England or they're stuck in Japan. Like last year was supposed to be Shingo and Dickinson. That maybe that happens next year. Maybe it happens in New Japan between now and then. Who knows? But there's a lot that could change in the next year, as we've seen what's happened in the last year.
Right.
But I mean, you could very well see a lot of changes coming.
and WWE could make find a way to stretch their shows even more, which it seems like they're not going to care. They're going to run their shows, which I'm glad.
No, but I'm hoping what WWE does next year is they have this Evolve brand. Hopefully they run some shows. Hopefully there's a UK show that's over here. I mean, WWE could fill a weekend just with the guys they have.
Oh, absolutely.
So if they do that as a way to kind of counteract the indies, I'm all for it, because that's just more good wrestling for us to watch.
Right, exactly, because the fact is there's still going to be guys that are still going to go to indie shows. Maybe it's not going to be as packed, but I think you're going to get people that are going to go to it, especially if it comes back and everybody's there. You're going to draw more people. I think you had less people because there were less shows. You didn't have WrestleCon. So you're going to think about the fact that WrestleCon, you got guys there doing autographs. Yeah. You didn't have that this year. There's no...
And they'll probably have, you know, the WrestleCon show next year might even have AEW involvement. You know, those AEW guys are going to want to go make money too, you know?
Yep.
AEW says they won't run an actual show, but, you know, you might see an Omega on a WrestleCon Super Show. You might see the Young Bucks on a WrestleCon Super Show or something like that. So I think Dallas, so in Dallas, the way Dallas is laid out is there's venues that are all walking distance to each other. I mean, I did the Mania down there 2016, I think it was. And I mean, there was four or five different venues that were all walking distance to each other. So I think that will work out well. And, you know, hopefully we have a much better weekend than we had this year. Even though there were some gems in it this year, it wasn't the Mania weekends that we're used to. And I think that, you know, they're going to be in much better shape.
Anything's better than last year.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know what I mean? Like, you got to look at the positive side of it. It's not last year. It's not where we had nothing. At least we had something. At least we're
getting
back.
We did. And, you know, we can now watch the indies over the next 9 months or so and see how they kind of set themselves up for the future.
And I also want to say this, where we look right now, we're days afterwards. Hopefully we come out of this with everybody healthy. No COVID between, you know, passed around. And if that's the case, then we'll probably get back to seeing more indie shows sooner.
Beyond just announced another show as we started this podcast. They're only doing 100 people per show.
Yep.
But they just announced another one for June. So it seems like they're going to do the once a month model for now. If Uncharted Territory is back by the fall, then everybody's going to win, because that puts an exposure on so many more people. And it builds up names. So I'm hopeful that happens, and it's right down the street from us. So hopefully it happens sooner than we think.
Absolutely. I guess that's going to be it. So as I said before, part one of this, I don't want to call it the last episode, part one of this episode. Next week, we're not going to be here because I'm going to be down in Florida. I'll be in Boca Raton, and I'm not going to be able to. I'm going to be pretty inebriated, I suppose. Right. So I don't plan on doing a show. But when I come back, we're going to have a super show because it's our 50th. It's my 50th show. So we're going to pull out all the stops. It will probably be a 2-part show because it's probably going to be kind of long. But we're going to do a lot of stuff. It's going to be fun. Looking forward to it. Mike, of course, you're welcome to be on that. I hope you're there. I hope Sean Porter is on it. I don't know what happened to him. He was supposed to be here, but I know he had to work tonight. So maybe he'd kind of just had some shit to do before. But so make sure you tune into that. If you didn't watch part one of this, go back and watch that. Me and Mike K broke down WrestleMania and NXT. So together with this, you got your whole WrestleMania weekend. What was your, Mike, before we get out of here, what was your overall view of the entire thing, including NXT and WrestleMania? Because we talked indies and just a tiny WWE, but what did you think about the NXT shows and the WWE shows?
Loved it. I mean, I honestly thought that they hit it out of the park. I mean, there were some definitely missteps on Mania itself, but I thought they made up for it. I mean, Saturday was awesome. I really don't have many bad things to say about the Saturday show at all. Sunday, my only complaint was obviously the Orton match was, I still don't even know what the hell happened to it, even after they explained it.
It doesn't matter though.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't matter because Bray Wyatt came out of a box, so he's over.
Yeah, exactly. And then the woman's tag was whatever. I mean, Tamina getting a WWE Mania match, whatever. Maybe it was a Lifetime Achievement Award. But then the next three matches, which were your the Riddle match, not in the right order, the Riddle match, the Apollo match, and what am I missing? Sunday.
The Riddle match, the Apollo match, and Cesaro was Saturday, right?
That was
Saturday.
Before Rhea. It was the three matches before that.
I'll look it up really quick. I can't really... I'm lost on that. WrestleMania 37. Let's see what we got here. See, this is why I wish I had something interactive. This is where Sean Porter comes in. I blame him for us not having this. Sean, where are you right now?
Oh, Owens and Zane.
There you go. Yep.
They were all good matches, but they would have been great matches if they had five extra minutes. I thought. I mean, Apollo and Big E went 6 minutes and 50 seconds, and it was an awesome 6:50. But if they went 11 or 12, we're talking about it being a great match. Riddle and Sheamus went 11. That match was just starting to get hot, and it went to the finish. Owens and Zane, I was worried about Logan Paul. He didn't get involved. But if that match goes another 3 or 4 minutes, it's probably a legendary Mania match, the way they were building. Rhea and Asuka got 13 and a half. I mean, with my hope is in future years, if they go back to one night, they obviously were always going to have these short matches. But with two nights, you should be able to get some time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, should Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler versus Natty and Tamina been the second longest match of the night? No. So that's where I'm hoping that they kind of improve things in the future. First night I thought was awesome. I mean, past that women's match, everything was good. Braun and Shane was better than I thought it would be. It still wasn't great, but it was better than I thought it would be. I thought getting Omos out in that spot was good. Bad Bunny was way better than advertised. And then I honestly was scared about Bianca Belair being in that spot because I had never really seen her have a great match, but she had a great match in Mania. So I thought that first night was awesome. NXT kind of a lot of the same. I thought the first night was great. Second night was good. O'Reilly and Cole, too long.
Way too long.
If you trim 10 to 15 off of that, I think it's way better than it was. And I think that the length of that hurt the feel of Finn and Cross. And I thought Finn and Cross was an awesome match.
Uh-huh.
But you forget about it because you fall asleep during the main event.
I literally fell asleep during the, I think it went 40 minutes and 37 seconds or something like that.
But then the first night you had the time constraints of getting it under 2 hours and it was a better show.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, Walter and Ciampa was one of my favorite matches of the weekend. Maybe my favorite match of the weekend. So,
that was awesome.
And then like the MSK match was good. The Dunn and Kushida match was good. NXT is my favorite brand in wrestling because they're consistent. You know, their takeover shows are going to get knocked out of the park.
The only thing I think they did wrong, I think that they made it too long with the two. I said this in the other show. Listen to that. Go ahead. Finish what you were saying. Because if you want to hear my view, listen to the other part.
Yeah. I mean, I think in future years they'll be back to one show. Maybe it's a three and a half hour takeover. But I think there was an easy show to condense down to one night, and it would have been better because of it.
All right. Well, we're gonna get out of here. This was a great show. Anytime we have anything to talk indies, you have to be on because you're kind of like the indie guy. When Beyond comes back up here, we got to get a show and we're going to drag Mike K to it. we'll make him enjoy it. But anything you want to say before we get out of here? Any shows coming up that?
No, I mean, we're just pretty much waiting on word of when Moxley and Gage will be. Other than that, you know, I'm interested to see where the Ricky Shane Page Gage story goes from here, if it's done or what their next steps are. But, and other than that, you know, hopefully Beyond doesn't lose Dickinson anytime soon, but it might happen. So those are kind of the overlying laps of indie wrestling right now is who's next to go and who's next to step up. And that's kind of how indies are now. And we'll be saying the same thing in 6 months.
All right. Well, great show. Make sure you guys tune in a couple of weeks when we do the 50th episode. It's going to be a banger. Until then, I'm Mike K. And that's Mike Rossi. Mike K. I'm not Mike. Did I say I'm Mike K? This is what happens when I smoke. I'm Sean Puff. And that's Mike Rossi. And this has been Smarks, Spot Monkeys, and Super Kicks. Peace out. Big ups, Boston.
The Smarks in here, the Smarks in here, yeah.